beautiful people, you are now listening to season 3 of the Platinum Rule podcast. Our priority is to give our listeners the most recent information about current events, public policy, activism, and much, much more. Hello, Platinum people. After a long, much needed, actually not planned break, we are back.
Not planned at all.
For season 3, episode
5.
Season 3, episode 5. And we are back. We are better. We'll tell you all about it, but we're just happy that you're joining us.
Yes, we are very, very happy to be back with you all. We have 2 super amazing episodes already prepped for you guys, so just tune in. Sophia, how about you catch people up on what's been going on with you, and I'll do the same.
All right, so I think last time we talked, I hadn't gone on my trip yet, so I actually went to Texas, visited the fam, spent some time out there. It was a little under a week. I just got to go exploring. It was a lot of food, lots of drinks. It was a good time.
Those were the best times, truly.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so do you want to tell everyone the real drama?
Yes.
This is some real tea, you guys. Let them know what happened to your laptop.
Okay, so addressing the elephant in the room. The reason we have not had episodes out for X amount of weeks is because I have, and all my friends listening will vouch for this, definitely, 100%. I have the worst luck with electronics, my phone, my laptop. This time, it was my laptop. I was sitting at a table working on something, and water was about to spill, so I grabbed my laptop super fast, and it slipped out of my hands, fell on the floor. Screen was shattered. I couldn't even do anything on it. So after a much adventurous time to figure out what was the best thing to do next, it's fixed. I literally just picked it up from Apple less than an hour ago. We are back in business, baby.
First of all, your poor victimous laptop. So glad that she's back. 2, don't let Best Buy scam you.
That's my PSA. That's all. Actually. Yeah.
Well, yes. So the last time I spoke to you guys, I just finished up a really cool event that I did over Zoom. Since then, I was able to host a banner event in downtown Sacramento and just was on the street telling everyone that passed by about HR1 S1. And I'm sure if you guys have heard past episodes of this podcast, you know what that is by now. And if not, feel free to Google it. There's nothing wrong with that. Do we have any other announcements?
I don't think so. I just want to take a moment to say I'm very proud of her going in and handling that in downtown Sacramento. It looked like it was a fun, busy day. I talked to you after the event. She was putting in work all day.
It was very rewarding because I've never had to host an activist event before. And like, you know, as Sophia knows, like I'm not really into like parades or, I could frequent a parade, but like marches, large scheduled events like that, I just don't do due to my own anxiety. Like I feel like I can't protect myself. But it was like very, very small. My family was there. That was Mother's Day weekend, so I was with my mom and grandma and sister and a couple other people that came out to support, and it went well. Can't wait to do more things like that. So let's move on. For this week's Phone a Friend segment, we are talking red flags. Not relationship red flags, but negative tendencies you see in politicians, people in power, or those who have some type of authority. So, Sophia, what's one thing that you notice in other people?
I think about who I've considered best bosses or best leaders, best coaches, best politicians. And I think one thing that is consistent between all great leaders is that they're willing to do the work themselves. So when they're not able to, I consider that such a red flag. I think someone in a higher position leads by example. So I feel like if they're not leading by example, not willing to roll their sleeves up, go down to, I don't want to say the lowest level, but maybe like the nitty gritty of work that needs to be done, they're not willing to do that. I think there's a total lack of empathy and understanding that is needed from leaders. So that is a huge red flag for me personally. What about you?
Right. And to comment on that, it's different between delegating and just not acting at all. And I feel like being a manager, I'm sure you can speak on this, there's like a balance between, you know, needing help, but or just simply refusing, you know, to do something in general, which I feel like a lot of people who are bosses or managers do because, you know, they can. They have, you know, the underdogs that'll pick up the slack. So for me, I definitely think that inconsistent communication or open hypocrisy is a huge red flag. So yeah, hypocrites, like, we don't like that.
Yeah, definitely. There's nothing worse than like having higher expectations than what's delivered and empty promises. Oh my God, pet peeves. With that, we're going to take it to our phone a friend segment where we pass the mic to you guys. Be ready when we call you. What is something that you consider a red flag for someone in any type of leadership role?
A red flag in a leadership position involves when supervisors talk trash about subordinates to other subordinates, creating like a, you know, animosity and like a environment of just, an environment of just unprofessionalism. Yeah. And like setting that standard kind of makes other people not take you as seriously. So I believe gossip from like a supervisor to like a subordinate is a big no-no.
Yeah, they definitely have a lot of influence on the environment that everybody has to work in.
One question for you.
Yes.
What is a red flag that you noticed in politicians or authority figures?
So I would say a red flag for me would be if they're just not being direct with their statements, which I feel works for any sort of public figure. Like if you're asking them a question or something and they aren't straightforward with their answer, I think that's definitely a red flag.
I 110% agree. My answer was hypocrisy, so it's kind of the same.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll talk to you later.
That was interesting. We frame these questions differently, just along the same basis, but it does seem like sticking to strong communication is key. And it sounds like following up the words with actions that match are actually the most important critical part here. So very interesting hearing your guys' takes, whether it was with your supervisors, managers, or even just like leaders in our politics. I think it applies to all levels. I think a lot of people can experience frustration when actions don't match what words were spoken.
I'm kind of obsessed with our phone a friend segment. Can't wait to keep calling more of you guys.
Stay ready when we call.
Stay ready. All right, moving on. Before we get into some California headliners, let's talk about Texas again. So you may have heard, but Austin, Texas has now created legislation that would be making homelessness illegal. Please, let's have a mini discussion. What are your thoughts on this?
I think that's inhumane. First of all, let's take it back. I think if you can't resonate with the idea of homelessness, you've had very, very fortunate beginnings. Because
ultra privileged.
Homelessness is something that I feel like it becomes taboo to talk about. But what's really happening in a time of crisis, especially, like, I know we're looking up from the pandemic, but a lot of people endured such hardships throughout it that I don't want to forget about that and just jump to the conclusion of homelessness. There's a lot of factors that play into why someone even ended up in that position. So to make something against the law for those people is totally skipping the step of where we find in the equation of what we can change to alter some of those homelessness numbers. To make it illegal on its own just seems radical to me.
100%. So how do you feel about this? I guess what they're doing is if you are, you know, a transient, a police officer can ticket you. And if you do not pay that ticket, then the officer can arrest you.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, that cycle, you know, like you said, is not only inhumane, it's quite torturous because not only do they have to deal with the stress of possibly not being able to pay a ticket, they have, you know, prison laying over their head when really, you know, homelessness is, whether it's a choice or not, is kind of the bottom of the pit.
Is it really ever a choice, you know?
Well, this is the thing. This is the only reason why I say it's a choice. Some people do not have the mental capacity to
pay or sign up for a new social security number. They don't have the resources to find a way to get their birth certificate. They don't know how to build a resume. They can't go out and find a job. They don't have any connections. So instead of hustling, which it's a hustle to get all of that done, instead of hustling, they just choose to check out. And for me personally, as a human, I think you have a right to check out. I mean, life is hard. And, you know, living on the street isn't amazing, but you're able to, even if it's only for a short period of time, have a sense of relief.
Okay, I see.
So it's just a lot in general. Yeah.
The original point in addressing this even newfound law is like the human factor is slowly just being taken away from legislation like this. When this happens, it's very drastic, and it's not looking at the root of what we're really getting to here. Are we really classifying people of importance or not above or below the law? Why?
Yes, we've finally reached a point where everyone understands there's a group of people that care about humanity and being human as a whole, and there are a group of people that only care about themselves and self-preservation, and neither side can convince the other to change, and that's right. Where the catalyst kind of begins.
Are those factors of livelihood, career, having a family to go home to, having a car to get from point A to B, are those classifications that we justify whether a person should have laws placed against them or not? Why do we do that?
Capitalism.
In a system that was designed to not help these people in these rough situations, you know? It's very backwards. But I think that should wrap up what our thoughts are. Hopefully this creates a conversation that you guys can take.
Absolutely. And definitely look up the legislation for yourself for more information. Next, let's talk about the bribe of the century. Californians have the opportunity to win millions of dollars in prizes for being vaccinated or hundreds of dollars for signing up to get vaccinated. How do you feel about this?
One word. I think this is so tacky. I don't even think the fact that Americans have to be persuaded, the whole 50% of the population being vaccinated versus the 50% that's not, is already its own thing. I think the bribery of this, it just looks so tacky to me on America's part.
Well, that's understandable. It is pretty sad that we have to convince people to do something for the greater good. But I already know that we have to convince people to do things for the greater good. So cash prizes is a dub. Like, that is hilarious. I was explaining this to Sophia yesterday, just like my point of view on it. It's like, Daddy Newsom is like, here you go. This is your bribe to, you know, get straight A's in school. If you get straight A's in school, then we'll give you $20 at the end of the semester. And that's basically what this is. If you get your vaccine, if you do well, your shot, you get ice cream after.
See, I come from a household where it was like, no, you just get good grades. That's what you're supposed to do. So in my head, I'm like, no, we're supposed to get the vaccine. That's just what we do.
That's fair.
I don't know. Maybe it's a pride thing. I don't know. But I'm just like,
I love a good bribe. I have no pride sitting in the way for me in a bribe.
But if I win, though, I am willing to accept.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll share with my vaccinated family members. That's it.
Well, just so you guys all know, if you have gotten vaccinated, you are already entered in the giveaway. And if you have not been vaccinated, it's not too late. In other news, California will stop approving new oil fracking by 2024 under the executive order of Governor Gavin Newsom. I'm personally super happy about this because fracking contributes a lot to global warming. So as always, California is on the front lines, leaders for the nation. Next, the governor is also planning on sharing an $11.9 billion proposal that would send $600 stimulus checks to 2/3 of Californians and an additional $500 to families with children. Details including who would qualify are not available yet, but I will make sure to update you all with more info. Newsom's office said that the payments would benefit the middle class and low-income residents, so the stimmy talk has not stopped, y'all. It is coming. More money is coming. And lastly, the Senate passed legislation a couple weeks ago named the COVID-19 Hate Crime Act. The act would require the Justice Department to expedite and review pandemic-related hate crimes against Asian Americans.
It would also demand expanded data collection in regards to those crimes. It will now be discussed in the House, and my prediction is that it'll pass without hesitation. So, I've been reading a lot online, especially from other minorities speaking out about the act, and there's kind of a lot of controversy around it, especially in the minority community. Have you seen anything online discussing anything about that, Soph?
Honestly, I haven't seen too much talk about it in terms of how it being unfair, maybe how some other minority groups would see it. I think especially last year taught us to not speak over other minority voices, so maybe that's why I'm not seeing it. What have the conversations been looking like for you?
Most of the rhetoric I've been seeing are a lot of other minorities confused as to why there has not been legislation created to help protect other minorities in similar types of crimes. And all that I really have to say about that is this is a win. No matter if it affects you or not, this is something that's positive. I know it's hard to reflect on things when they're not directly impacting you, but a step for the Asian American community is a step for all communities, and especially when it comes to bills and legislations that protect African Americans, a lot of our issues are systemic. And that's a lot of things that people online are not understanding. Our problems cannot be solved with a bill. Our problems have to be solved with changing or dismantling an entire system.
I'm going to keep my eyes open for that now.
Yeah, I've been seeing mostly on TikTok comments. It's not like okay. No one in my personal circle pays attention to politics. So they wouldn't know.
Yeah, and honestly, TikTok land is savagery in the comment section.
Yeah, but like I feel like I have to read through a majority of them so I have like a really good scope, because for me I'm like, yes, this is awesome, like we're getting things done, especially the fact that it was passed in the Senate first, and then for, you know, the response to be semi-negative. And I think it's just because a lot of people are naive. They're not understanding that, you know, not every problem can be fixed with the bill. And I think that, you know, creates a stronger divide between minorities. It doesn't strengthen anyone's community to be upset that someone is experiencing something that's beneficial.
I completely agree. So are you ready for our next segment? Go ahead and give her the introduction she deserves.
Yes, so this week we have the honor of talking to Jordan Williams. I actually saw Jordan on my TikTok For You page months ago, and I've been following her ever since. If you all remember, she was one of the creators that I suggested you all check out during Black History Month. She did an amazing Black History Fast Facts series that introduced her audience to facts they were not aware of. But she is so much more than her TikTok videos. She's an educator and an inspiration to all that know her. Welcome to the conversation, Jordan. So we are just going to hop in with questions. Sophia, do you want to start us off?
Yes, definitely. We're so excited to have you on finally after so much talk and watching your TikToks. Amari gave you an intro, but give us a little of your background, what you're up to today, how's your last year looked like? Fill us in.
Yeah, so I graduated from my undergrad last year, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, so that was really fun. But I actually have a degree in English with concentrations in literature and creative writing, and I have minors in business administration and women's and gender studies, which, you know, I pretty much write a lot and I read a lot and then I read a lot and I write a lot.
Busy.
Yeah, I was busy. Undergrad had me running. But now I teach creative writing to a group of kindergarten through second graders. I also work as a virtual admissions counselor, helping college age or high school age students getting into college and what that process really looks like for them. And I make TikToks. And that's pretty much it. Oh, and I'm starting grad school in the fall. So I will be pursuing my master's in poetry.
Very exciting. Yes, that is so, and you are so eloquent, so I cannot wait to read all of your poetry. What made you want to download TikTok in the first place, and what motivated you to start creating your videos?
Yeah, so funny enough, part of it was definitely like the pandemic. It's like, oh, bored in the house, bored.
Yep.
Everybody's talking about TikTok. Yes. I'll give it a shot. But at first I've always wanted to be a model. And so at first I was like, oh, I'll use TikTok to see if I can get maybe some modeling tips, some advice, just different stuff like that, maybe get my face out there. And then one night there was this trend going around called No Nuance November. And I just did like a little quick, no, no, it's November. And I did it about like the Black community at first. And I was just like, hey, like we've got some things we should sort out. But anyway, and that went like a little viral. And I was like, wait. If you think I have things to say about my community, I got things to say about y'all. Mm-hmm. So I did one on like white allies and what white activism tends to look like and how it tends to hurt other people. And that led to a bunch of other conversations. People were like, oh, do one on this community. Talk about this. Talk about that. I have questions about this, that, and the third. And so I really started making TikToks to answer those questions and to work with that like new audience I was gaining. And I did a TikTok on fat phobia, and there was this trend going around that was like bodies that look like this and then they pose, yes, also look like this and then they'd relax.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, this is why skinny people shouldn't be leading the body positivity movement, because we're talking about like, I love my body when it's skinny and when it's not as skinny. But like fat people and the people who created the body positivity movement are talking about like, let's liberate ourselves from that entire idea. And I made a TikTok about it, and Lizzo saw it, and Lizzo reposted it. And from there, my life has just been answering questions and making TikToks and doing skits. And
we love it. You go all out with the costumes, makeup, and you have fun with it.
Yes, you guys have to go on her TikTok and her Instagram and look at her looks. It is stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, aside from the aesthetics and all, as beautiful as they are, what's most beautiful about your videos are the actual topics you're addressing. So for everyone tuning in that may have not seen them yet, can you give insight to your main starting place for, you know, creating this content and the conversations you're starting?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was in undergrad, I focused a lot on intersectionality and what it looks like to have different conversations and be inclusive of all people in those conversations. But my big focus is womanism and intersectional feminism. I also talk about racism and how to be a good ally and accomplice. And I focus a lot on like the body positivity movement and like fat phobia and what those conversations look like to actually be inclusive as opposed to what we've got going on now. If I had to pick a big three, those would be my big three.
You know, these are really heavy, dense topics you talk about. I'm just curious, what's the feedback like? We always say TikTok's the land of savages.
Yeah. It's been a hit and miss, a hit and miss. Some are really good. I have really good days where everybody's like, I love this. This was a great idea. This was a great conversation. I didn't even think about taking this conversation and looking at it from this lens. I've had some others, like I definitely ticked off like the continent of Europe one day. Because I made a video about lip fillers, and I was like, if you, like, be mindful of how, like, much lip filler you're getting, because some of y'all start to appropriate Blackness. Like, you want to look like Kylie Jenner, but Kylie Jenner is appropriating Blackness, so just be mindful of that. Boy?
People get so angry, and I...
They got
and
angry.
The other thing that I saw, I'm not sure if you've probably made a video on it, but I feel like this is something that you may have touched upon, is the self-tanning. The lip filler, yeah, and the self-tanning trigger something in a lot of so women. And it's like,
angry.
Throws me, like, to see this. And it's like, but you're the one that's stealing it. So why are you angry?
Right. I'm like, why are you mad at me? Because, like, I also did one, because I did one on lip fillers. And somebody else was like, what are you going to talk about next? Fake tanning? And I was
like, you're like, I just might.
Actually, I am. and so I did.
So what was your take on that?
Everybody, like, so many people were just like, I didn't think about it in a global lens, and maybe that was my bad, but like I had, everybody was like, you can't generalize all of Europe. Like, it's not just one country. Americans are so stupid. And I was like, there are 44 countries. I got 44 flags. So I'm a generalize because you're all in attendance. But I just did one on like how fake tanning can sometimes, I didn't even say anything. I was just like, wow, fake tanning couldn't possibly be racist. I pulled up like pictures of like Rachel Dolezal, Ariana Grande, or back when she was really, you know, doing the thing.
Doing the most.
Yeah, too much. I pulled up just like some pictures. I was like, how could that possibly be racist? I have no idea. And that went kind of viral as well, which like I didn't see coming. It's a conversation we need to have just about like, you can't wear my face if I can't wear my face safely. Like, you can want to look like me all you want to, but like, if I can't look like me in this human existence, you have no right to take that because it's in right now. Like somebody was like, being tan is in right now. And I'm like, that's crazy. Skin color shouldn't be a trend. That's weird. Like, why is this not weird for anybody else?
And then on top of that, they're not understanding the harm that it creates within our community when it comes to colorism. Because when you are a creamy brown on a white person, it looks great. But if you are a true yellow brown on an actual brown person, you're not as favorable because the white person isn't choosing to be your brown. And that just creates a whole nother layer of issues that they're not even recognizing that they're creating. I mean, it's not a personal attack if you're listening to this and you self-tan. We're not telling you you have to stop or like there's something wrong.
No, go off.
This is just something that you have to consider when you're making decisions. It's just like everyone has to consider what their impact of their decisions are. That's all. That's all this
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Yeah. Just, it was a call for mindfulness. And at the end of the video that started it all, at the end of the Lip Puller video, it was a skit. And it's like, I always have like conversations with a white girl. That's pretty much what the skit is. And it's me as a black person and me as a white person having this conversation. At the end, the white girl goes, so I can't get lip fillers then? And the girl goes, you can, just be mindful. Mm-hmm. And that last part just... right over the head. I was like, okay, maybe if you made it through the whole video, you would know that, like, it's not to police what you can and can't do. Like, number one, who am I to tell you what you can and can't do?
Right.
But I can tell you the consequences of your actions if you're not thinking about those consequences. And, like, if you have the privilege of not having to think about it, I don't ever expect you to think, oh, like, maybe I shouldn't get my lips super, super filled because I might appropriate blackness and these consequences. Like, I don't expect you to think that. But as somebody who experiences the repercussions of that, I'm telling you now, and so you can take that knowledge going forward. And I got a lot of hate for that one. I'm okay with that though, because some of it was funny. Like, it really brought out people's like inner racism. Like, I had never been slurred so much. I had never been like bullied so much. I was honestly getting a hoot out of it. Like, nappy headed monkey, and I was like, you have 400 years to think of an insult. And you're still going with that.
You're still
400 years.
Like, that is supposed to impact my psyche.
I'm like, you go off with the same insult that your great-great-granddad used. Like, okay. Yeah, it was wild. For the most part, though, it's pretty positive. I think the wildest experience I've had was I got this, like, it was long. It was, like, 4, like, big paragraph hate message on Instagram. Like, it got, like, frantic by the end. And I just texted back. I was like, are you good? And the guy was like, not good. And so we talked about it. Like, we had a full conversation. And I was like, dude, I see why you're angry. I understand where you're coming from. But you don't see where I'm coming from. It's making a hard conversation. We talked it out. And by the end, he was like, I'm sorry I came in so hot. You really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. And that was really fruitful. But he came in on 10.
Just shows how much of a gift that you have, that even those types of interactions just motivate you to take it one step further, to really connect with someone as a human. We need more people like you out here in the world, for sure. The next thing that we'll kind of dive into, since you kind of mentioned it, let's talk about intersectionality. Can you give our audience second grader definition of intersectionality?
Absolutely. So intersectionality, it's a term created by Kimberlé Crenshaw, if you want to look more into it. But intersectionality is pretty much all of the different ways identities can merge and intersect and overlap. And what that means in terms of oppression and also privilege. So it's pretty much like a super big Venn diagram. Maybe there are lots of circles, maybe there are only a few circles. It's pretty much like you exist in the world as Black. But if you exist as a Black woman, that's an intersectional identity because you experience both womanness and also Blackness in the same breath. If you're like, I am Black and bi and a woman, and so I experience all of those things in the same moment. And what that means in terms of having to maneuver LGBTQ spaces that also have racism, experiencing trying to be a part of like the feminist movements that also have racism. How do I be LGBTQ in a system that's in Black communities that tend to be kind of like homophobic and closed off to those ideas, and what that experience looks like maneuvering multiple identities in multiple ways. And so I'm really big on that. I like to describe it like a big tangly web where everything just kind of overlaps and intersects. It takes a lot of brain power. Like when you first start, it's like, oh, like I thought about like being trans, but I looked at it from like a white able-bodied lens. But if you look at it from like a Black disabled lens, you're having an entirely different conversation. It's just like a big, complex spider web of identities.
Something that helps you connect with others, because there are some people that are part of your Venn diagram and then some people that are part of both sides of your Venn diagram. And if you find someone that's part of all three, it's like a match made in heaven. It's like, you get this. It doesn't always have to be divisive at all. It's actually a way that we all can relate.
So part of working with intersectionality, and something you and many other activists do, is point out the barriers that unfortunately do exist within these different groups that are fighting the good fight. And these groups take your choosing of whatever oppressed group comes to mind. The point being that there are exclusions that exist that leave out members within these groups. And sadly, that does take these groups a step back in a way. Can you get into some of these missed perspectives you've mentioned in your work?
Absolutely. If you don't look at it from an intersectional lens, you're missing the whole story. And so you're operating with only a part of your puzzle. And you can't make decisions based on only a part of the picture. So like, in terms of cultural appropriation, maybe people don't understand the significance of wearing braids or having braids like the ones I have in today. Because in the realm of just whiteness or just white maleness, you don't have to think about your hair in any type of way. Like, to you, it really is truly just hair. But if you look at it from a Black woman's lens, it's like, this hair is a big part of my identity. This hair is what keeps me policed. This hair is what y'all make policies on that keep me from different resources. It keeps me out of a job. Or it's how you determine my self-worth. You determine if I look responsible enough to have this job or if I look put together enough because of hair codes that existed long before you came about. But without you, they will exist long after you're gone. And so it's up to you to help me take those things down that are holding me back because I didn't put those into place. Your great-great-great-grandparent did. But if you're not helping me take it down, that will impact my great-great-grandkids. And so you can't enter these conversations going, oh, it's just blank, unless you understand the whole picture. And if you're not aware of the fact that you're missing the whole picture, of course it's not going to make any sense to you. Of course you're just going to go, I don't know why you're so dramatic about this. Like, it's just hair. To you, sure. But you're not getting the whole story, the whole picture. So it's not just hair, or it's not just an outfit, or it's not just shoes, or it's not just earrings, or it's not just whatever it is. It's the culture attached to it and the relationship with trauma. But if you don't understand that trauma or why it exists or how it impacts different people differently, you're not going to be able to have a full conversation. But a lot of times people making decisions are the people who aren't having that full knowledge. So we have a bunch of like white, predominantly male lawmakers making decisions on poor, low-income trans people who tend to be people of color. It's like somebody who has never understood my experience or even entertains my experience is making decisions that directly impact my body and my personhood and my safety. So it can be, not only is it just super annoying, it can be really dangerous and really harmful to just make choices based on your limited worldview. And it does tend to impact minorities the absolute worst.
And since we're kind of touching upon policy, hair was a wonderful example to start with. Do you want to go through like a couple other ways that the lack of acknowledgement of intersectionality has impacted policy? And if not policy in particular, just like society, maybe just in like the conversations that you've had with people and the misunderstandings that they've expressed to you?
Absolutely. So I think a lot about like the bisexuality, the biphobia debate that's happening right now. And I saw this one TikToker, she's a Black woman, and she was talking about like how DL men are just like self-hating and self-loathing, and it's not a woman's fault, it's a man's fault. And her perspective came from her womanness, but her lack of LGBTQ understanding and the relationship with that trauma and what it means to have like your sexuality be criminalized and how that directly impacts men because of the way that the patriarchy has meant that men can't show anything feminine or soft or whatever. When we took queerness and made it feminine, it isolated men from being a part of that conversation. It isolated men in a way that it doesn't isolate women. It just doesn't, because we are the feminine, the soft. It's okay that we're like this, but if a man does it, he's weaker, he's invalid, he's cast aside. There's going to be a completely different lived experience because they occupy a completely different set of identities. Even if we're both Black and bi, my womanness in this instance keeps me safe. And that's not something that creator understood. And so she just perpetuated these really harmful stereotypes. And in her comment section, like DL men were getting death threats. And I was like, You might not think you're doing anything, but the impact of your actions is putting these people in direct harm's way. Another one that I can think of off the top of my head is the Asian fishing conversation and how that fox eyeliner trend is going around was going around.
Yes. And the procedure where you can literally insert something that pulls the top of your face up above your eyebrows.
Right. And it's like people don't understand. And this was a wild conversation to be a part of, because in one hand, people didn't understand what it meant to be an Asian person with eyes like that, who've been bullied like that for their whole life, only to have those eyes come into fashion. Flip side of that same coin, though, a lot of Black people also have almond-shaped eyes. And so a lot of Black people were accused of Asian fishing when that's literally just their face. And we didn't understand enough about the Asian identity or the Black identity to have this conversation in a really, like, fruitful, productive, concrete way. And so instead, it just became a mess in a way. It's just kind of like fallen apart in our hands. And I was like, this could be like really fruitful and a really great opportunity to look at what it means to be a person of color and have these traits of a person of color and how it directly impacts one identity more than the other. But this identity still deserves to exist in this space because this is also their face. Nobody in that conversation really looked at it from an intersectional lens. And so it just wasn't as useful as we wanted it to be. And in return, we had a bunch of other people who were like, see, this is why y'all shouldn't be so sensitive. This is why you shouldn't care about da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, bro. And it makes it hard to be a person of color trying to have these conversations in these spaces because there's not much room for error. There's not much room for making a mistake and trying to learn and grow from that, because there is somebody always breathing down the back of our necks, waiting for us to make a mistake so they can invalidate the whole conversation and uphold the status quo. It's exhausting. It's like playing chess all day long, but it's like playing chess for your life. And it's like, wow, that's kind of exhausting, because the other guy over there doesn't even know how to play chess. He just has like all the, like, he's just a cheat sheet and he's just moving things along. And I'm like, I don't have anything. I barely know how the board works, but if I lose, something bad's gonna happen to me. What do I do? And it's just, whew, it's a lot. But the more I get into it, the more fulfilling it feels to be able to facilitate these kinds of conversations.
And since we're kind of revisiting your point, I'm not sure if you guys have seen this video on your For You page, but a creator introduced the idea of the reason why men who are bisexual are gay, but also feminine, because not every single man that's bisexual and gay is feminine. That's like a horrible assumption that has been projected onto them. But those who are feminine are not respected or less respected because it is feminine, and femininity is not respected as a whole, which is back connecting all this intersectionality as a whole. In reality, they're just a person.
Right. Like, you're mad at somebody walking down the street minding their business. And that also reminds me of another conversation I've had about like the difficulty of solving like issues within your own community when you don't understand intersectionality. So like, mm-hmm. like I keep going head to head with Black men about, and I don't know why I keep doing this, but I do, about intersectionality. And there was this conversation happening about a month or two ago where every person of color was like, men of color and white women operate in a very similar way. And of course, all the Black men in my comment section were like, And what I saw the most was that I can't be an oppressor. I experience racism. And I was like, baby, you are also a man. And they were like, but I'm a Black man. Like, I'm over-policed. I'm in the prisons. And I'm like, yes, I hear you. That is a very valid, real experience. However, Black women also have that experience. The person who is incarcerated most behind you is Black women. So we see you, we hear you, we feel you, but we also experience being a woman in a society that doesn't respect women. Like, there are 65,000 Black women, at least 65,000 Black women just missing. Nobody's looking for them.
No one.
Our sexual assault rates are 1 in 4 as opposed to the national average of 1 in 6. That's 25% of Black women, and yet y'all don't want to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. Y'all want to talk about what it means to be Black without talking about what it means to be Black and anything else, because it doesn't impact you at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot about how the Black Lives Matter movement, it's a brilliant concept, but it was started by Black women and yet often misses Black women. It often excludes. I think a lot about Breonna Taylor and how her name was memeified and commodified and used as like this 164 days, no justice for Breonna Taylor. But when the AG botched her case, where were the people? Where were the tears?
Where was the outrage? And where was the accountability?
And her name just fizzled out. For men, we have George Floyd. And that's not to say what happened to George Floyd. It was awful. It was horrible. But I think a lot about how George Floyd at least got a day in court. And that's something Breonna Taylor will never have. We wouldn't even know her name if she hadn't died in between two Black men. Mm-hmm. And that's not a conversation we're having. Like, Black Lives Matter advocates a lot for police, like ending police brutality and fixing our judicial systems. But who's having the conversation about hospitals and medical neglect and how that's decimating Black women? Like, we're not having those conversations because we focus on Blackness from the male lens and not Blackness from the intersectional lens, mm-hmm. because nobody really understands, and we don't teach intersectionality in a really concrete way. Like, I didn't have these talks until I was 20. And I'm like, if we had these conversations at 6 instead, we could get somewhere.
Exactly. I wholeheartedly agree. Before we hop off of this call, would you like to plug any accounts, anyone you want to shout out, or any literature, videos, Netflix, anything?
Oh, excellent. I always suggest an overview of intersectional feminism and womanism. Kimberlé Crenshaw kind of like coined the term intersectionality, and I think she did a really great job as a Black woman. So I always like cite her off the bat. I also suggest looking up misogynoir and what like misogyny and also Blackness looks like, just because I look at everything from like a Black female lens. That being said, I have two incredible creators. They're at is the Jesse Eaton and Down with the Mouse. She just changed her username and it's so funny. But I also try to advocate for Indigenous creators, because the only people who really understand like the Black female experience is the Indigenous female's experience. And so I always recommend my friend, it's Agruna. Her name is actually Aruna. It's spelled Agruna, so you know how to find her. So those are the homies. I also recommend T. Blizzy. T. Blizzy does love a great job covering it. I love T. Blizzy. She's a delightful human being. Huge fan. There is a short essay called In My Mother's Garden, and that talks a lot about intersectionality and what that looks like. Also heard it's a documentary, so I need to go check that out because I heard that's pretty exciting. I also really like, there's a book of, there's some poets I love as a poet. Nikki Giovanni is my favorite poet, like literally of all time. And then I also have this book called Confessions of a Barefaced Woman by Alison Joseph, and it's incredible. Like, it's probably my favorite book of poems of all time. It's just, it's funny, it's witty, it covers like the Black female experience, but it also covers like just human existence. 10 out of 10.
Wow. Well, this conversation was spectacular. I am so, we are both just so grateful and honored that you took the time out to speak with us. I think our audience is really going to appreciate that, because it's just like such a stimulating topic and something that affects every single person that's listening. So outside of that, I guess we just want to say thank you so, so much. We will be following you to the end of time. Can't wait to see what you do next. You
gave us so many starting points for just even starting conversations on intersectionality. And I'm sure you gave a lot of listeners just a first look at it as well. So we'll definitely be in touch. Wishing you all the best.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me, everybody. It was great to talk.
Absolutely. And with that, we just wanted to say thank you guys for returning and tuning in.
As we'd like to emphasize, we're just here to spark something for everyday people who do everyday things that have the magic to make differences everywhere.
With that being said, if you're feeling in the mood, leave us a review and follow us on Instagram, if you don't already, at Platinum Rule Podcast.
Bye.